Either way, you know, me and him roll different stuff. You know, we go to Jamaica, we go a couple places and we'll no fight. So Gary T calling and telling about, you know, when Gary and I work over Timmons and all these things, you know, we used to go there at night time and we just hold a jai, we reason, we eat, and laugh.
Yeah.
And that's how I said to you. So at the end of the day, you know, we're going to keep him laugh alive because that's one of the most treasurable things we have to keep in the ear, the laugh. You see the laugh, Johnny?
Yeah, man, the laugh. The laugh.
And the only man who laugh and cry, brother. But I like to you. See?
Hey, P. Yeah. You know, when time Flux is long as I play music, and Flux is playing music, you know, say, all of that stamping feet.
You notice that?
See.
Those are mine. Now when the music reaches, him say, yo, Flux in the building! Yo, he was a great dude. I don't like you. And, you know, it was good to know him.
For real.
You know what I mean? I don't regret no moment at all. So bless up on yourself and keep up the, you know.
Yeah, man.
The work. And for the people out there, remember, we still have a chance to go take a look at Fluxy from 7 to 9.
Yeah, because like I said, I'm leaving right from the studio right now. I'm going to head straight up there.
All right. And so, Johnny, you need to get in touch with me here, sir.
Yeah, man. All right, sir. Respect, sir. See you.
Yeah.
And also, I get to understand that, say, over the MCSO, like, I'm having a little thing for Fluxy. You know, so all of the man who love Fluxy, the people who love Fluxy, who just come out and just come celebrate a musical celebration. Because, you know, so I'm going to be there, and Rajamo going to be there, and the other Fluxy clang and crew and friend going to be there. See, we're just going to have a party, celebration party, and celebrate life. See, so a bunch of people, I'm going to look for my virgin one more time before I'm gone. See, I don't know if more will come with me, but me, I go up there. See, so right now, I'm going to play the song for the family. And I just want all of the Barrett them, especially the youth them, a Fluxy. Only thing I can tell you is just be strong. See, all right.
I pray, oh Lord, to face another day.
Oh. You know, so we want to hear, right? It's all about next week, same place, same time. Watch yourself, right? Go on, big step, and hold on strong.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize?
Our consciousness is affected.
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
We'll be right back. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You are listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial and www.cqt.ca online.
You're listening to The Prison Radio Show. My name is Virginia.
My name is Noah.
And we're your hosts for today's show. Today we'll be airing an interview done by Rico from Prison Radio in Kingston. The interview is about the December 14th riot in the federal prison in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. We will also be talking live on air about Jaleel Muntakim's current situation. Jaleel has been placed in a segregated housing unit, or SHU, for the next 4 months. We will also be airing some musical requests from the New Year's Eve noise demo that happened in Laval on December 31st. But first, some news items. Thousands of people imprisoned in the United States federal prisons are waiting on their clemency applications to be approved, 13,042 prisoners to be exact, and Obama is in office for only a few more days. Last month, United States President Barack Obama granted clemency to 231 prisoners, the most individual acts of clemency granted in a single day by any president in U.S. history. According to the White House, Obama has now commuted more sentences than the last 11 presidents combined, but Obama has taken no action on several of the most high-profile political prisoners seeking pardons or clemency, including Native American activist Leonard Peltier, Puerto Rican independence activist Oscar Lopez Rivera, and Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning. Professor of Political Science P.S. Ruckman says the U.S. president can do even more. He says the president should grant amnesty to all first-time nonviolent drug offenders in prison who would not even be in prison now if they were convicted under current law. Ruckman further argues that pardon and clemency power should be taken out of the hands of the U.S. Department of Justice, which is, after all, run by prosecutors. The Free Alabama Movement reports incarcerated organizer Kinetic Justice was physically attacked and maced while handcuffed by two prison guards at Limestone Correctional Facility in Alabama in December. Justice was a key organizer in the mass prison strike this fall. Since then, he says he's faced multiple transfers to different prisons, as well as retaliation from prison guards, including being denied water by prison officials at the Kilby Correctional Facility earlier this fall.
On or around December 3rd, a water protector at Ossetti Saccoan received a summons to appear before a federal grand jury that has been convened in relation to the resistance of water protectors at Standing Rock. Grand juries have a long history of being used to target those in resistance to the state and engaged in political or revolutionary movements. The purpose of this grand jury and all grand juries that target revolutionary people and communities is to cause division, manufacture prisoners of war, create paranoia and suspicion amongst comrades. Water protectors stand in resistance to this grand jury and all tools of state repression, be it on the ground, through Morton County's violent tactics, or in the shrouded secrecy of a grand jury courtroom. Indigenous people, water protectors, legal workers, revolutionaries, and comrades from across the camps are actively organizing resistance to this grand jury. If you have been contacted by federal law enforcement or have been served with a subpoena related to water protector activities or the resistance at Standing Rock, please contact the Water Protector Legal Collective at 605-519-8180. Again, that's 605-519-8180. Grand juries rely on the isolation and fear that can come with a subpoena. The first step of resistance is seeking solidarity and support.
On December 21st, 2016, longtime political prisoner and organizer of the New African Black Panther Party prison chapter, Kevin Rashid Johnson, was gassed. Rashid was taken out of his cell handcuffed and maced. All of his personal belongings were taken. Rashid's supporters say that this incident happened in retaliation for Rashid's continued writings about terrible conditions in the Clements unit where he's being held outside of Amarillo, Texas. Rashid's writings also draw attention to the deaths of prisoners Christopher Wolverton, Joseph Como, and Alton Rogers. Rashid's supporters are asking people to call the prison. You can check out our blog for more information on who to call and what to say. On January 3rd, 2017, federal judge Robert Mariani ordered the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections to immediately give Mumia Abu-Jamal antiviral medications for hepatitis C. According to Brett Grote from the Abolitionist Law Center, who has been Mumia's lawyer for this case, this is, quote, the first case in the country in which a federal judge has ordered prison officials to provide an incarcerated patient with the new medications that came out on the market in 2013.
In good news, Maliki Shakur Latin is out of prison after 37 years behind the walls. Through organization collaboration and shared belief that change is possible, Maliki Shakur Latin walked out of prison on parole last month after 37 years. He's finally reunited with family, friends, and community. Family and friends of Maliki Shakur Latin thank everyone who contributed to this people's victory. Maliki Shakur Latin's imprisonment is over, but his transition into minimum security America is just beginning. You can visit rally.org/Maliki, M-A-L-I-K-I, and donate to his release fund to help him cover the cost of basic survival and small comforts his footing.
Friday, January 27th, at Casa del Popolo, Kai Kello launches Accordéon, a novel published by Arbiter Ring Books, featuring live performance and music by Ari Swan, Nick Schofield, Stefan Christoph, as Rêve Sonore. 8:30 p.m., free. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Up next, we have an interview that is coming to us from Prison Radio in Kingston. In it, Rico talks to Sherry from Saskatchewan about the December 14th riot in Saskatchewan Penitentiary in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. Sherry runs support groups on Facebook for prisoners and their loved ones, and her information comes from a prisoner who was present at the riot. During the riot, prisoner Jason Leonard Bird was killed. Prison Radio in Kingston did not include information about Jason's death in this interview, and we would like to send our condolences to Jason's family.
Okay, so do you want to just start by introducing yourself and the groups that you're involved with?
So, yeah, my name's Sherry, and I have a Canadian Prison-Wise support group and a Beyond Prison Walls Canada Facebook group. They both can be found on Facebook. And they just offer support to prison wives and families that are going through the tough time of incarceration. Women just vent on there with issues they have. I mean, being a prison wife or even a mother of somebody who's in prison is not easy, so people, they vent their problems, and we just offer support. I think we're at about almost 100 members right now, and you can find anything on there from, if you just want to vent your story as to why your husband's upset or why the system sucks, because it does. A lot of stuff's going on with the prison riots. You have family that are in South Penn right now.
Maybe going back a little bit in terms of what kind of things have been happening, I understand that Saskatchewan Penn was the most complained about prison in Canada through the ombudsman. So what kind of stuff was going on? What was the situation leading up to the riot?
It was all over the food. They weren't giving the proper portion sizes. They were adding fillers to it, to their food. So they were starting to take, like, cornstarch or flour and mix it with water to add weight to the food. The portions weren't the right size, so the inmates got upset. 2 weeks before the riot, all the inmates decided to stop working, and there was actually social workers that were starting to work in the kitchen. Before, when they said they weren't going to work anymore, the guards came in and said, okay, well, we're going to put the guys from protective custody into the kitchen then. Well, the inmates said, no, they're not going to eat food served by anybody in protective custody. So they were going to go on a hunger strike. To get that far, that's why they brought the staff in, I guess, the social workers and that to cook. And then they had enough of doing that. So then there was a meeting that was called and nothing changed.
So was the strike across the entire penitentiary, or was it specifically in the kitchen? Do you know?
Actually, it started with, like, the kitchen, but I know that before they rioted, they said, okay, well, you know, if things don't change, we're not going to work the kitchen, we're not going to work the canteen, we're not going to do nothing. So then they were threatened with, okay, well, if you guys don't go to work and you guys don't start doing your stuff, they're going to take away their inmate social, which was, they have one just before Christmas, and that's, they have, like, Santa there at Christmas time, and it's good. You know, they look forward to that. They were going to take that away from them. They were going to take their Christmas canteen, which they get extra stuff at Christmas time that they normally wouldn't get. Actually, they had threatened to even say, we're going to take all your canteen away from them. That's where, I guess, the inmate committee and staff and that decided, okay, they have another meeting, and nope, nothing's changed again. And then they just had enough with all their threats, and that's when that riot broke out, which, yeah, it was just chaos, because from what started as a peaceful protest led to the riot because the guards came in with guns.
Were there demands brought forward or negotiations that happened prior to that, or was it immediate conflict?
When it started just peaceful and they came in, they instantly announced their, I guess they have this over the speaker system, a prison riot code. But yeah, when that riot act was done, he said it was like as the riot act was being read over the speakers, which most of the inmates didn't even hear it because the speakers were broken out there, the guards came in with their guns.
This was the refusal to lock up at lockup time, right? As a way to protest the food portions?
Right.
Okay, and so the guards came in, and what happened at that point?
Well, they said that the inmates had made barricades, but they said that the guards were cutting them down with tools that you would use, like, in the jaws of life. And then they said the guards were shooting bullets at the floors, which then would ricochet and hit inmates. They sprayed their gas guns, which ended up having guys, I guess, pass out. They had inmates eventually lay in their cells with their hands behind their head and their faces down to the ground. And then they put the flashbangers, which are like a grenade, into these guys' cells. He had told me that on units E3 and 4, there was a hole shot into the floor and the inmates were getting shot at. And I guess this the inmate I had talked to said that one of his friends got shot in the leg so bad that it tore a piece of his back leg off, and another one got shot in the knee, which took his kneecap and, like, wrecked his kneecap. He was sent to the hospital for that. The inmates were taken off the range, and a lot of them were sent to the hole, which is, like, solitary. The inmate I talked to said that there was about, probably 9 to 10 inmates in a cell, and they were left in there with no clothes, and some of them had no shoes, just blankets. Actually, some of them didn't even have that. They were just sitting on the cement floors. And I guess during the riot, the guards had smashed the inmates' TV and destroyed their clothes. I mean, yeah, the inmates did break stuff. But there is one unit where, yeah, like, the toilets were busted, the sinks were broken. There was actually, and I think it was from the guards shooting in the floor, that you could see into the other units below them. So inmates were jumping down through the floor or the ceiling into the next unit. One of the inmates was shot and hit with a guard's billy stick so bad that they ended up breaking his forearm and a few fingers.
So you're saying that they actually broke through the floor and were able to move between units?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, when I talked to this inmate and then the other inmates I've had that sent me letters or, you know, sent me Facebook messages, not from prison, but from somebody they had talked to out in the community, they said this was, like, one of the rankest riots they've ever seen. It's definitely one for the books, is what their exact words were.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the stories from the Kingston Pen Riot in 1971, which is a pretty infamous incident around here. But you don't hear about something of that scale happening very often.
it was just chaos. And then this inmate had told me that that night of the riot, there were guys sent, oh God, there probably was over 200 of them sent either to Saskatchewan Max, Edmonton Max, or Stony Mountain Max.
So if you're a family member of somebody in Prince Albert, say, or even Saskatoon, how far of a drive is that now to go see somebody?
Say about 10 hours, 8 to 10 hours now to drive from Prince Albert all the way to Winnipeg. So it's it created tension in there, and there are still some guys out there. I'm not too sure what the atmosphere is like out there because, you know, in Max, you only get scheduled phone calls. They're only at certain times. Haven't really heard much of what's going on there. But I know at Saskatoon, last I heard, they're still locked up, the guys at Max. They've been on lockdown for 18 days.
Right through Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that's the way the CSC operates. They like to do that. And this is like what CSC does. They say they like to keep family close together. No, we don't. My fiance got switched from Saskatchewan to Alberta Institution, and I only seen him, you know, once every 3-4 months. And it was, for me, it was a 10-hour, almost an 8-hour drive. And, you know, a visit is expensive. That's what I'm saying. Like, some of these families now, they have to go 8 or 10 hours. Well, you got to get a hotel. A 2-day trip for me to go see him for, you know, 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon, two times, on a Friday and a Saturday was about $600 to $800. That's a little bit intense. That's almost what my rent is.
That's just to see somebody once every 3 to 4 months, too.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. And, like, this thing about taking these inmate socials away because they didn't want to go to work, that's something that they really strive. That's set up by the inmate committee. And these inmates are paying, you know, for the families to come. They charge a lot. Like, it's $20 a person, I think, to attend the social. And the food was just unbelievable. So, and that's why I say, like, the food that these inmates, I can see why they protest. The quality of meat, a lot of inmates have told me that since the food and everything's changed, like, you can't eat it. You have to down tons and tons of water just to get it down.
It sounds like there's been a buildup of tension kind of generally.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, and I mean, here in Saskatchewan, the complaining of the food is in the portion size, has been not just in the federal institutions, it's the provincial too. The food quality is awful. Then this is why so many of them have canteen and, you know, they're buying tons of food. And they're like, you can buy in the inmate canteen, you can buy lots of stuff, but it's expensive. A small brick of cheese, for instance, that you would pay, you know, $4 for here in society, they're charged about $8 or $9 for it. It's sad. And then they took out things like, I don't know if you guys are familiar out there with, like, Corcan, where they were to build stuff. Harper took that out, and that was the biggest mistake ever.
The incentive pay for Corcan work.
It's sad. And if you're not working, and a lot of them say, you know, why work? Because if I work, I have to pay rent. After I pay that and I pay all my, you know, my inmate fees and my phone and stuff like that, you have nothing left. I think he was left like $5 or $10. So what's the point of working, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like one of the only reasons left to work is because they will not give you parole if you don't.
Yes, and you know, one of the only reasons, other reasons to work is to get out of your cell. Because some places, like I know Drumheller for sure, if you work, you get out of your cell during the day. If you're not working, you're locked up and you don't get out except at lunch, and then you get out again at like 5 o'clock after supper. So otherwise, you're locked up all day. That's actually another thing with Saskatoon, that the guys were saying that if they don't go to work, they weren't getting any of their living money. I think every day they get so much, even if they don't work. The guards were threatening to take all that away, so they wouldn't even have money for their phone. And that's what they do. Like, if you don't behave the way they want you to, they'll threaten you with something. And I think that's just where they give up and just, I don't care. I encourage their protest. For that, I was like, right on, good, do it again. They should do it.
The regional president of the Guards Union, James Bloomfield, made a claim to the media that the guards had saved a whole bunch of lives by sending in the emergency response team. What do you think about that?
So basically all that is a bunch of guards ready to fight. Because they have all their, you know, their guns and their sticks, and basically they're just like a SWAT team is what they are. A lot of the inmates call them the goon squads. They don't come in to do anything to save anybody. Just so that it looks good to the media or it looks good to people, they're ready just to basically whoop whoever's ass is in their way. And in this province, I mean, the system is completely racist towards Aboriginal people. When I was helping this inmate, Forrest Pelche, from a provincial institution, he had said, you know, I always find that Saskatchewan was a place that nobody cared. It was like the Canadian Louisiana or whatever. He says, you know, like, black people are the target in the States. Well, in Saskatchewan, it's Aboriginal people. They just don't care. And it's true.
I recently saw a CBC retrospective on the Kingston Pen riot in 1971, and they had some of the guys who were involved speaking and reflecting on it, and you could tell there was a mix of seriousness because it was, you know, people got hurt and there was some heavy consequences faced by everybody involved, but there was definitely some pride in the fact that people stood up and made history and asserted themselves as human beings. Do you think this will be that kind of moment?
Yeah, I think it will be, because things like that, like, hopefully the correctional investigator looks into this quite a bit more and things get changed from it. There was a news reporter that was doing a bit on segregation. I found so many inmates when I told them that if you've been in SEG and you can talk without your name being revealed, or if you want to give me the information and I'll pass it on to the reporter, they had lots of people talk. And things change. I'm hoping things change. Like I say, you know, it takes time, but I think the ones that some of them just are to the point that they don't care anymore. Who knows what they say or anything, and just they gotta do something to change the way things end there. Nothing gets better unless somebody stands up and takes a stance. And looks like somebody did it. Now all these people are in max, pretty much. And they know that it's probably going to get worse. The punishment that they're going to be in, a lot of them probably got institutional charges and, you know, things taken away, and it's going to involve them going to SAG and the whole. But I think for things like that, some of them just don't care. It's like, whatever. You know, they'll deal with it. A lot of them are pretty tough. I think they know the consequences before they actually do it, but I hope it changes for them.
And as far as you know, that nobody who is there has spoken on behalf of anybody or delivered a statement or anything like that yet?
Like, inmate-wise, no.
Yeah, like the inmate committee or any group or anything like that?
Nothing that I've known yet, but then again, like, the wives I know that have their husbands were already in max, they're just going based on what these guys that came from Medium have been telling them, and like, yeah, they're still on pretty much lockdown, and it's been about 18 days now. So they only get really taken out, I think, if they're lucky, for 1 hour a day, if that.
And what do you think happens next? What happens now?
Well, from my understanding, they're probably going to keep these guys in max, wherever they've been shipped to now, until they can repair that Medium security unit, because from my understanding, what everyone's saying is it's completely trashed. I think they're going to try and keep them in that SAG as long as they possibly can, because they don't care once they're there. And I mean, if they're all in SAG and they're locked up, you know, 23 hours a day, that's easier for the guards. They don't have all those inmates running around all day. Their job is a lot easier. They just sit there and do nothing. They only have to watch so many inmates because they only let so many of them out at one time. They're never in a rush to do anything. Like, actually, the day after the incident, I heard that they had no water out there, that they were using pretty much like porta-potties as bathrooms. I'm curious to see what the correctional investigator is going to say or do, especially seeing that Sask Pen was one of the places that had, like you said, the most complaints. They just feel nothing gets addressed, and that's partially why that riot. Why the protest started was because they kept asking and bringing it up, and they weren't even being rude about it, but nothing was getting done. Nothing was being heard. It's like they just don't care. That's almost like with the image. They don't care.
Everybody's heard about it now.
Oh, yes. And that is good. I mean, I'm not even working in my field. I have a justice degree. So if I can do one thing and be the voice of some of these inmates, by all means, because I'm not scared of what CSC is going to say to me.
And your group, did you say it was a Saskatchewan specific group, or is it open to any wives?
It's open to anybody. Yeah, it's Canadian Prison Wives. It's on Facebook. It's a closed group, the Prison Wives group, just because I've had people that seem to be, you know, sketchy, like guards or something. We always worry about that. So we don't let anybody in there because we don't want, it's private, you know. You know, people post stuff and people don't want to be known that they're a prison wife at all sometimes.
Yeah.
Keep it, it's closed. Nothing that gets posted on there, anybody else can see it. Some people don't post and they just message me or another admin and we do it that way. But I think we're close to almost 100 women now.
It sounds like a valuable source of staying in touch and mutual support.
Some of these wives, you know, if they're in different provinces, they help each other. I've actually had women in Alberta that they are living in the same city, you know, Edmonton or Calgary. They join up together and they go, you know, do stuff. They hang out together. Best thing, I was happy when I seen, you know, different wives hanging out together. You know, you see the pictures on Facebook, it's good because it kind of distracts them from the crappy life, because it's not an easy life. I honestly, having the background of CSC and prison from schooling and stuff, I don't know how any of these other women can handle it, because there's so much that's unknown. I don't see things, it's going to take a while for things to get better, and I don't think anything will get better until the CSC gets exposed, the whole system gets exposed to, hopefully the public cares. A lot of them, I know in Saskatchewan, this is a place that I don't think the public will ever care, not for a long time, until it hits one of their family. That's what I always say.
For the people listening in to this interview outside of Saskatchewan, what would you want to say to them?
You know what, for inmate-wise, if you guys, if they have problems out there, definitely stand up and do something about it. You know, I never expected a riot like that scale to happen out in Saskatchewan. I mean, we're small, but definitely don't take the crap that they give. The only way change ever happens is if, you know, somebody stands up and does it. And chances are, there's a lot of guys who are fed up with the system anyway, and it just takes one person to kind of talk about it, encourage it. Eventually, it's got to get better. I'll help any inmate or any family out there. Send me your prison stuff. I'll take it to the media. I did that already with this guy. And the media wants this stuff. Anytime I go to the media and I'm like, yeah, I have actual prison documents of stuff that's going inside, oh, they want it. So don't think that people don't want to know what's going on in there. They do.
That was an interview conducted by Prison Radio in Kingston with Sherry, a prison advocate in Saskatchewan. Sherry runs support groups on Facebook for prisoners and their loved ones. In the interview, Sherry talked to Rico about the December 14th uprising in Saskatchewan Penitentiary in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. The time is presently 5:32 p.m., and you are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
Up next, we will be hearing live on the phone from Claude, who is a supporter of Jalil Muntakim. Jalil is a former Black Panther and has been a political prisoner since 1971. Claude, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get started talking about Jalil, do you want to introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure. My name is Claude Marks. I'm the director of the Freedom Archives in San Francisco. I'm also a former U.S. held political prisoner, and I've been doing prison work for most of my adult life, which is a while. So that's who I am.
Cool. Thank you. The Prison Radio Show has been reporting on former Black Panther and political prisoner Jalil Muntakim for a long time now. But for folks who have never heard of him, can you give a brief introduction to Jalil?
Sure. As you mentioned earlier, Jalil, as a 19-year-old, was active in the Black Liberation Movement. He's a Bay Area youth who got involved with the Black Panther Party, among other organizations, and was busted in 1971. And has been held for almost his entire life. He's now, Jalil is in his 60s, and he's been locked up since, as I said, 1971. So when you do the math, that's 45 years practically. He comes from a family that really stressed his learning the history of the Black Liberation Movement and resistance, going back to resistance to slavery in the African continent. So he's a very conscious and educated leader. And he also is somebody who is a teacher inside prison, which is really the root cause of why he's being locked down even harder today than he was years ago. Mainly he was teaching a black history class at Attica, which is one of the maximum prisons in New York State. And because prisons fear knowledge so much, and they fear people becoming politicized and organizing themselves, that's a point of vulnerability. So in Jolyel's case, we don't know exactly what happened, but something he was talking about last month in December in a class that he was teaching rubbed somebody the wrong way, and they charged him with five various counts of and infractions having to do with the security of the institution. But really the what we think is the basis of the repression against him is based on who he is and what he thinks about and how he presents the role of black resistance to other prisoners. So initially he was put in the hole in isolation in Attica, and we learned earlier this week that he was transferred to a control unit prison called Southport, which is kind of south of Ithaca, also in New York, where he has less access to phones, visitation, things of that nature. Probably doesn't have his belongings and things with him at this point. Until his case is resolved, they're capable of holding him in this control unit prison. A control unit is a prison situation where you're basically in your cell at least 23 hours a day, and whenever you're moved, it's in cuffs and chains, and that there is no social recreation that takes place, and no programming, and no education, and far less access. So it's totally punitive, and isolation, long-term isolation, has really historically been used to try to break people down. Literally to destroy them psychologically and take away their will to resist, which is by no means how Jolyel is going to deal with this situation. But you can imagine that for somebody who's done that many years, even though he's fully capable of dealing with time in isolation, this intent of this is as a form of retribution to his trying to educate other prisoners.
You talk about this a little bit in the context of talking about Jolyel doing political education in prisons, but earlier in the fall we interviewed Crystal and Mala from the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network, and they talked about institutional charges that Jolyel was facing for writing with them, charges that were eventually dropped. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the larger context in which Jaleel's current trip to the SHU is happening? I know he was up for parole this summer but got denied, and that's happened more than once. I don't know if you want to talk a bit more about that kind of context for him.
Well, Jolyel has been parole eligible since 2002, which in New York State means basically every 2 years you go to the board and they say you're a threat to the community. It doesn't matter who you are, how you've changed, what you take responsibility for, or how you view yourself in relationship to the community that you are still a part of. They basically throw the charges that convicted you, that they convicted you on, as the basis for denying you release. And they do that consistently. They don't do that only with him, but they do that with people who are political, as he is. And he's one of about 14 people who were members of the Black Panther Party who are still locked up now since generally the 60s and 70s. So, the issue of parole, while its intent on the books is one thing, what its misuse or its proper use depending on your view of prisons. I personally think prisons are functioning well for the agenda of the state to prevent, you know, the potential of rebellion from either happening inside or spreading to the community. So what do you do with people who have a potential to rebel? You keep them locked up and you try to destroy them. If you don't kill them directly, you put them in a prison cell for the rest of their lives. The U.S. denies that there are political prisoners in the U.S. There are political prisoners from a number of movements, whether it's the Black Panther Party or the Puerto Rican Independence Movement, whether it's people like Leonard Peltier, who's a Native American struggler, whether it's people who are fighting against the Green Scare. All of these political and politically conscious people are targeted specifically by the state because of who they are and what they believe. And for Jaleel, as you mentioned, he was charged with simply communicating with a group in the community, particularly in a period when there was a lot of actions taking place in prisons around the U.S. With a focus on the Attica Rebellion in 1971 at the prison in Attica that Jaleel happens to be in. And even though he was charged and those charges were dismissed, there was a level of repression that he experienced. The charges around his teaching Black history may well be dismissed also, but not without the fact that, you know, the impact on him is going to be some chunk of weeks or months in isolation without his normal routine, without access to his legal materials necessarily, reading materials and things of that nature. That's who he is. That's who the system is. And, you know, that this is endemic to mass imprisonment and political imprisonment in the United States.
How can folks on the outside support Jaleel at this time?
Well, I think one of the main things to do is to stay in touch with both the Jericho Amnesty Movement, which you can look up, or his website, which is, I believe it's freejaleel.com. And that's how people can do it. There will be developments, and it's, you know, really difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen. For updates, there are, I think the best way is to go to freejaleel.com, which is freejaleel.com. And that's where you can read his blog and stuff about who he is and find out about his family and friends and various parole campaigns, and in this case, an attempt to try to get him out of a control unit prison, which he's been in for, you know, still somewhat over a week at this point.
That's it for my questions. Do you have anything that you want to add?
Well, I appreciate, you know, the chance of being on the air and advocating for Jaleel Muntakeem.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
And I'm glad you do this work. And as you know, there's other folks that it's almost an endless list of topics. So it's great that you're doing consistent programming around prison issues. Thank you for that.
Yep. Thank you so much for coming on air.
All right. Talk to you another time.
Yep. That we were just talking to Claude Marks, who is a former political prisoner in the U.S. and who currently organizes with the Freedom Archives Project. We were talking about former Black Panther and political prisoner Jaleel Muntakeem, who is currently facing institutional charges relating to teaching Black history in Attica Prison in New York State, and he's recently been transferred to a control unit prison elsewhere in New York State. I'm pretty sure his new mailing address is also up on his support group's website, which again, for those who didn't catch it before, is freejaleel.com, so freejaleel.com.
During the New Year's Eve noise demo that happened 2 weeks ago, organizers realized that the megaphone they were using was broken. Unfortunately, that meant that some song requests they received from folks on the inside were not able to be played during the demonstration itself. those requests have been forwarded to us by some of the organizers, and so we're going to play a few of those songs here, starting with Black by Pearl Jam.
She's all empty canvas. Yes, my friend. We did a street again. Yes,
Metal bars, Jah Jah, I'm chanting. pray for your love divine. I'm oh so sorry, man. Deeply I'm hurting. The price ordained to be mine. Impossible to see the changes that I've made in my life. All they see is just the boy they left behind. And I swear that I can be a better man. Yes, I swear, yeah. If only you could understand the fate of patience is to sleep with fresh eyes. Said the free reflection. Da 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 da. Don't judge me wrong, 'cause now I'm stronger than I was before. I was young and made in my life. All they see is just the boy I left behind. 'Cause I swear I can be a better man. I swear only you could understand. I swear I can be a better man. And I
that was Pearl Jam, followed by Bob Marley and the Wailers, and then Ja Cure that you were just listening to right now. Those were a couple of the song requests passed on to us by organizers of the New Year's Eve Noise Demo, which happened on December 31st in Laval. The time is presently 5:58 p.m., and you've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, January 27 at 11 a.m. It looks like we'll have new Canadian Senator and former Elizabeth Fry Director Kim Pate live on the phone with us for that show. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 25.